It's time now for Oh the Humanities, taking a look at humanities scholarship events and research on campus, off campus, and now, of course, online through the Carolina Public Humanities. Humanities.unc.edu is their website for more information about ongoing and upcoming events. Ordinarily joined in the studio by Max Orr. Today, we've got an equally special guest, Lloyd Kramer, who heads up the Carolina Public Humanities on campus. Lloyd, thank you so much for being with us today. How are you?
I'm okay.
I haven't seen you in forever.
It's been a while, but I'm glad you're still doing all the good work you do.
Thank you. So, we've got a special guest, which I'll let you introduce, who's waiting on the phone. But as we get into that, what's going on with Carolina Public Humanities right now?
The reason Max is not here this week is he's leading a webinar on the allure of dictators, and he's tied up with that this week. But in the coming week, we are doing a very interesting program at Flyleaf Books, part of our ongoing Humanities in Action series, on the problem of historical injustice and the memory of genocide. And I'm very pleased to have with us today my new colleague, whose name is Dirk Moses. He's the new Frank Porter Graham Distinguished Professor of History, focusing on the history of human rights and also on the history of genocide. So his presentation is going to be on the problem of genocide, and we're very happy to have Dirk with us today.
And he's also the author of a book called The Problems of Genocide, worth checking out, too. Dirk Moses joining us on the phone right now. Thank you for being with us. How are you?
Very well. Good to be here with you guys.
So tell us, I guess, to begin by talking about the event that's happening next week, Wednesday. It's going to be September 30th at 3 p.m., as Lloyd mentioned, at Flyleaf Books, but streamable online for people who register at the Carolina Public Humanities website. Historical Injustice and Memory Today, Genocide, Colonialism, and the Contested Past, which is a title that contains a lot of very weighty topics. So what can people expect to hear?
Well, I'm going to be talking less about the US and all the statues that have been coming down and contested here, about which you're all, of course, very well aware, and talk more about what's happening in other parts of the world, including where I come from, Australia, as you can guess from my accent, where we've also had controversies about monuments and statues regarding the colonial past, and also about place names. And I'll be featuring many of those contested places and names in a PowerPoint presentation, so people can get a very visual sense of what we're talking about. I mean, it's not uncommon in rural Australia to have creeks, you know, streams called Murdering Creek, or there is even a Mount Jim Crow in Queensland, where I come from, was recently renamed. For obvious reasons. Those kinds of contestations about the past, you know, rethinking about the legacy of colonial rule, is going on in other parts of the world as well. Now, it's one thing for it to occur in situ, you know, in the settler colony in Australia, in the case I'm talking about. It's another when it's in the home country, in the metropole, in Britain or Germany, or Belgium, where the empires were housed. So there they have a different kind of challenge. There it's also replacing names. So in Berlin, there are many street names named after colonial heroes, as they were thought of at the time, from the German colonies in Southwest Africa and German Southeast Africa from the early, before the First World War. And they're being changed because there were Germans engaged, the German Imperial Army or protective forces engaged in, you know, genocidal counterinsurgency. In Britain, it's more about the legacy of slavery. Many institutions are finding out, as they are here, that their accumulated capital and at least their seed money came from donors and benefactors who made lots of money in the slave trade in the 18th and 19th century. So they're rethinking those things. Now, why this is happening now and, say, not 30 years ago is something that I want to talk about and ask why it's happening. I'm certainly not going to be taking sides here. You know, the point is to analyze why these things are happening rather than to play be the umpire here. So that's basically what I'm talking about.
So thank you, Dirk. This is Lloyd, and I just wanted to follow up on that with a sense of what is your perception of the similarities, but also the differences between the situation in Australia in terms of this history and the situation in the United States. What's similar and what's different?
Well, superficially, they seem similar because we're talking about monuments of white heroes, colonial heroes. But it's only a superficial similarity. The main difference is that here these are monuments to a civil war, and the, in particular, the losers of the civil war. Although there are also the controversies about Columbus monuments, but there are more parallels there because it's about the colonial conquest at the very beginning. So in Australia, it's about what happened to the indigenous people. In this country, there's not much attention to what happened to indigenous people, in other words, Native Americans. These aren't statues. These Confederate statues are not contested because of Native American issues. It's because of slavery and the Civil War. Now, there is a little parallel with Australia with the far northeast, where there was a what were known as blackbirding practices of indentured or forced labor by Melanesians, who were basically kidnapped from their islands off the far off the Queensland coast after the end of the slave trade, into the end of the 19th century. So legally, technically, they weren't chattel slaves, but in practice, it looked pretty similar. And they were instrumental in ensuring that the sugar plantations functioned up in North Queensland. And now, it turns out that some of the major settlements up there, like Townsville, which is a major city, a regional town and city in North Queensland, is named after one of the entrepreneurs who set all this up. And of course, the descendants of these people who were forcibly brought out and then discriminated against as non-whites afterwards aren't very happy about it. And so we're having a discussion about the not only the place names but also memorials to these people. So that has somewhat more of a parallel with here. But the big difference in Australia, the founding of the state of European settlement is symbolically contested. That's not the case here. I mean, Native American intellectuals exist, but they don't get much public oxygen. Here, the major issue of historical justice and injustice is slavery.
Speaking with Lloyd Kramer in studio, Dirk Moses on the phone. You're hearing him. He's a historian, the author of The Problems of Genocide, and he'll be speaking next week, Wednesday, at an event hosted by Carolina Public Humanities called Historical Injustice and Memory Today, humanities.unc.edu, for more on that. And Dirk, you brought up a really interesting question a couple of minutes ago that I want to come back to, which is the question not of why, but why now? I know here in Chapel Hill, we've had this contestation over symbols of slavery and white supremacy that have dated back decades and decades. Silent Sam was never not controversial, but there's something about the last few years that somehow became a tipping point. And as you mentioned, this is happening everywhere. So what is your thought about why now?
Well, if I gave you all the answers, no one would come to the table next week. But it's a really interesting question. I don't know if I've got the answer nutted out. But I think the conditions of globalization and the velocity of transmission of images and information makes a big difference. In other words, social media and the internet. So the impetus, I think, started, the non-American one, started in South Africa with the Roads Must Fall campaign to take down a statue to Sir Cecil Rhodes on the campus of the University of Cape Town. And that then moved to Oxford because there's a bequest, the Rhodes Scholarship bequest at Magdalen College. And there's a statue of Rhodes implanted in one of the buildings. And this then set off inspiration for a campaign in Australia. And then meanwhile, you have activists who were then inspired by that to redouble their efforts in Germany, because parallel to this, you have reparations negotiations between the German government and the Namibian government about the consequences of the genocide in 1904-1905. So you have a lot of parallel processes which then become enmeshed, and they can become enmeshed, and then in everybody's Facebook and Twitter feeds and Instagram feeds, because these feeds exist and information can intersect mm-hmm. in a way that they would have remained in silos, 10, 15 years ago. Mm-hmm. People wouldn't have been aware of what was going on in Germany. But, mm-hmm. You just have to, the New York Times even reports on what's happening in there. And then the activists there get inspired by the activists in South Africa and likewise here. And then it becomes sort of a feedback loop and escalates. I'm sure that a lot of people are unhappy about this,
So this is all part of what's the painful historical reckoning at UNC and at many other institutions. I was just reading an article today by two of our UNC graduate students, Garrett Wright and Lucas Kelly, in which they talked about how much of the early wealth of the university came from the sale of Native American lands, which had been confiscated through treaties. And in fact, the budget of our university was for many years in significant ways funded by appropriated land that was sold on the market. And what's so painful about all this is we have a great university, but it has a very complex history. And this is what I think, the humanities are helping us understand. We have to come to terms with our history in order to move beyond it. Is that a fair assessment of what's happening everywhere in the world, Dirk? Every institution? Please tell me we're not that unusual.
No, it is, and each institution's doing it their own way because their histories are slightly different. A place like Oxford has many different colleges and many different benefactors, and so you have to look at the circumstances of each one. And even within their colleges, they have different situations. So one of the colleges has a Codrington Library. I forget which college it is. And that library itself is donated by funded by, major slave bequest. But, no one expects them to tear it down. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's an exquisite building and an exquisite collection, which brings us to another issue that the humanities can help us focus on. Is it's not just that we need to reckon with the past, which can become an empty slogan. It's like, well, what do you do? So you have this paradoxical situation of enormously important public institutions, which serve a very progressive and redeeming function in societies and have for quite some time. But with a foundation which is flawed. Mm-hmm. Now, I don't think anyone's suggesting, though, because of this flawed foundation, that you tear them down. You have to reform them or, renegotiate their purposes. But, to what extent? Now, this can only be done in public discussion, and it can only be done on the basis of accurate historical facts, which means that we need to research and archives. Mm-hmm. And that's what the humanities not only provide us, with the material that we can debate about, but also a style of reasoning. Now, that doesn't mean we necessarily come out with an answer like a mathematical equation. One thing I will point out in the taper next week is that if you progressives and conservatives just have philosophically alternative ways of dealing with historical evil. Like the conservatives would say, we recognize that humans are flawed, no one's perfect, and that institutions have flawed foundations. But that doesn't mean we should renounce these institutions. We need to be aware of them and then sort of just carry on. Whereas, a progressive and particularly a radical perspective would be we need more of a root and branch refoundation.
Yeah.
Now, in a way, there's no way of getting beyond those philosophical differences.
Yeah.
Speaking with Dirk Moses and Lloyd Kramer, and again, the event is next week, Wednesday, 3 p.m., humanities.unc.edu, for more, including a link to sign up. We've got to wrap up this conversation. We're out of time, but Lloyd, over to you for the last word. Other things that folks ought to know about things coming up.
Thank you. First of all, I want to thank Dirk for his very interesting perspectives and cross-cultural perspectives on the problem of memory, legacy, and injustices. But the following week, which is the week of October 5th, we are having an Adventures and Ideas seminar on polarization in past elections, looking at 1800, 1860, and 1968, and trying to get a sense of what makes this year similar to past polarizations and what makes it different, and trying to find some understanding on the mess we're in right now. That's our situation, Aaron.
That's going to be a good one, too. Humanities.unc.edu for more on those events and quite a few more. Go to the website and learn more about Carolina Public Humanities. Lloyd Kramer, Dirk Moses, thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you,
Aaron. Good to be with you.
Good to be with you.